And good morning. I'm Elizabeth Harrison in Providence. The Filipino-American Association of Newport County is raising money for victims of the typhoon. Association President Chester Gotaco says they will soon announce collection sites for items of clothing and household goods. More immediately, they're requesting cash donations. Gotaco says several hundred Filipinos call Rhode Island home, and many of them are worried about their relatives.
I think they're in shock. It's like almost incomprehensible that what's happening, and they just don't know what to do.
An estimated 10,000 people have been killed by the typhoon that slammed into the Philippines on Saturday. There will be a court hearing today on a lawsuit over Rhode Island's use of standardized testing as a high school graduation requirement. The Rhode Island chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union claims the State Board of Education violated open government laws in dealing with the high-stakes testing mandate. The lawsuit challenges the board's debate and vote in secret to reject a petition from 17 different organizations for a public hearing on repealing the high-stakes testing requirement. The board claims it discussed the issue in private legally because it was already the subject of another ACLU lawsuit. The testing policy has forced 4,000 Rhode Island students to retake the state test, and they must show significant improvement to be allowed to graduate. In Boston, the attorneys for the surviving Boston Marathon bombing suspect, Jahar Tsarnaev, are asking for relief from restrictive prison rules. They say the measures are interfering with their ability to represent Tsarnaev. As Bruce Gellerman reports, he's accused of working with his brother to construct and plant two bombs near the finish line of the Boston Marathon.
Since late August, 4 months after his arrest, Tsarnaev has been held under Special Administrative Measures, or SAMs. He's in solitary confinement. He's not allowed to communicate with other prisoners or the news media. There are restrictions on his access to mail, phone calls, visitors, newspapers, and publications. Likewise, his attorneys are also prohibited from speaking about the case to reporters or anyone outside of the defense team. In motions that will be considered today, Tsarnaev's lawyers argue the restrictions violate their client's constitutional rights to due process, access to evidence, and legal counsel. But U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder says the special measures are, quote, reasonably necessary. Tsarnaev is not expected to appear at today's hearing.
That's Bruce Gellerman reporting. And there were wreath-laying ceremonies and parades all across Rhode Island yesterday in honor of Veterans Day. But perhaps none was more poignant than one in Pawtucket. Rhode Island Public Radio's Flo Jonick has that story.
About 200 people gathered in Pawtucket's Slater Park for the dedication of a granite monument in memory of Army Specialist Dennis Poulin. Poulin, a native of Pawtucket, died from injuries sustained in a rollover accident in Afghanistan 2.5 years ago. He was 26. His mother, Doris Poulin, says she's overwhelmed by the honor bestowed on her son.
It means that my son is not forgotten, and that's what it's all about. I don't want my son to be forgotten.
Pawtucket Mayor Donald Grubbian says he didn't know Poulin when he was alive, but admires his sacrifice.
If Dennis is anything like the family, that says a lot. There's a lot that this family has done to keep this young man's honor and his name in our memories. And it's truly, truly our pleasure under these circumstances to remember those who have fallen.
The monument stands at the entrance to Slater Park on Armistice Boulevard. Flo Jonick, Rhode Island Public Radio.
Chances are good you've seen Heather Abbott on TV or on a magazine cover. She was waiting outside a restaurant near the Boston Marathon finish line when one of the bombs went off. Her lower left leg was so shattered she chose amputation over a life of pain. And since that day in April, Abbott has been facing a long recovery. But she shared her journey, giving lots of interviews, appearing at lots of fundraisers. She's become, for some, the face of triumph over tragedy, the survivor who seemed to smile her way through adversity. Abbott says that learning to walk on a new prosthetic leg has been a kind of triumph.
At this point, I probably don't even remember what it was like to walk on two legs because I'm so used to walking with a prosthetic leg now that it's not as big of a deal.
Abbott sits on an overstuffed couch in her sunny living room in Newport. It's cozy and light, with a beachy decor that seems a perfect fit in this seaside town. Newporters have rallied around her, but despite the support, getting to this point, being able to get around without crutches or a wheelchair, has been hard. First, she had to come to terms with just being an amputee. She says it hit her last June at an event for disabled athletes.
There were a lot of people around with prosthetic legs, and it was difficult. I think to see all these people that at one time I would have looked at and probably felt bad for them, but now I'm one of them.
Then she tried on a prosthetic leg for the first time. It wasn't what she expected.
I didn't realize, first of all, how much it would hurt.
It had only been 8 weeks, and her surgical incision was still tender. All of this was still so new to her.
I guess when I see people walk with prosthetic legs, and they look like they're walking like everybody else, I guess I assumed it would feel like walking like everybody else, and it doesn't.
Next, Abbott had to learn to walk again. She says it's not as simple as just putting on a new leg. The maker of that new leg, her prosthetist, had to show her.
When I was first learning how to walk on it, the prosthetist would have to tell me, you know, how to shift my hips or how to kick my leg out, and things that I never thought about when I was walking that I guess people do when they're walking.
You also have to get the right fit. To do that, she says, the prosthetist takes a cast of what's called her residual limb and uses that to craft a fiberglass test socket to fit over it. That plugs into a metal rod with a foot attached, but that's just the beginning of a long process.
And I would try it out for a couple days and see if it fits okay, if there's anything hurting me about it, and then I would go back to him. Let him know how it feels and if there's areas that are pushing the wrong way or it doesn't feel right, he'll make some adjustments. I'll take it back, try it out for a few more days, and that could go back and forth several times.
When they settle on a fit, the prosthetist makes a final carbon fiber socket. To put on her new leg, Abbott pulls a silicone liner over that residual limb. The liner has a pin in it that locks into the socket, and that's attached to the rest of the leg. These days, Abbott says she can spend all day on it, but at night she needs a break.
The silicone is, you know, somewhat of a cushion, but it is hard. I wouldn't call it comfortable.
And it can become even more uncomfortable as her limb changes. She says it can take close to 18 months for the swelling to go down after surgery. That means the leg she has now will soon be too big. Gain or lose 10 pounds, you have to be refitted again. Plus, prosthetic legs only last for a few years. So she says she'll be spending lots of time with her prosthetist, among other medical appointments.
I have physical therapy. I have appointments with my prosthetist. I have appointments with my surgeon, my rehab doctor at Spalding.
On top of that schedule, Abbott says she's still learning how to handle daily life as an amputee. Sometimes, she says, a situation that was once so routine becomes totally unfamiliar.
I can remember a time when I brought clothes into a dressing room, a pair of pants, and realized I was going to have to take my leg off to try them on. And, you know, sat down, took the leg off, and then realized that I had hung the pants across the dressing room and I couldn't get over there to get them. So, you know, so that I shortly learned that I need to keep the clothes close to me when I'm trying clothes on.
Other lessons aren't so mundane.
I was in a hotel room recently where the fire alarm went off in the middle of the night and I was on the 21st floor. So to have to get down 21 flights of stairs was not easy. So I've learned that I probably need to ask for a low-level floor when I stay at a hotel.
But Abbott says she doesn't want anyone to feel bad for her. In fact, she says she wants to help other amputees the way they've helped her cope. And that's why she says she's decided to talk to the media, to go to the fundraisers, to share her story and her time.
I don't think I would have been as successful as I have so far if I hadn't had people that could demonstrate to me that this is not the end of the world. You know, I can remember someone that came to see me in the hospital telling me that she had a prosthetic leg and this was not the biggest problem in her life. And she said, you know, I get up in the morning and I put it on just like I put on a pair of glasses, and then I have a million other problems to worry about. And I thought, you know, if I can get to that point someday, if she can do it, I can do it.
She's doing it. With lots of help from friends she's come to rely on.
You know, probably one of the positive thing that's come out of this whole experience is because I've never really had to rely on anybody for anything too major. I've really discovered who's really important in my life and kind of came through for me.
Kristen Gourlay, Rhode Island Public Radio.
Healthcare reporting on Rhode Island Public Radio is funded in part by a grant by the Rhode Island Foundation, Rhode Island's only community foundation.